So when everything started with all this stuff in Israel, you know, I talked about some of the prophetic stuff. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to have to address this because I know every, is it okay to say idiot prophecy teacher out there, is going to get everybody stirred up and believing their chart, their flow, and all of that. And it's in the latest conspiracy thing. That's the other thing that gets me riled up, because when people are going around calling the President of the United States a pedophile, and you don't have proof of this, and nobody's been convicted of a crime, you are diminishing and destroying a man's name without evidence. Just because you saw it on the latest website, it's a true conspiracy. I get so amped up about it. So I wanted to address not the latest conspiracy. I wanted to go through, and I think I told you I was going to go through Ezekiel, and I was going to go through Zechariah and all these other things. And then I just felt like the Lord wanted me to shift it to not now, but to later. And what I'm going to start today, oh, you can start recording now. Figured you probably figured that out. He's pretty smart, despite being Billy's son. That's recorded. Right. If you had feelings, I'm with you though. Right. It's all love. It's all good. It's how guys say, love you, bro. We poke at you. And I just felt like the Lord was shifting that I don't need to be doing the Ezekiel thing now. But what I felt like I needed to do was to go through what got us to this place in history today. What led us to Israel today. And it's going to take a couple weeks. When I put that on the announcements, I'm going to go through the notes and I'm going to stop at 3-ish. And then we'll pick up next week and the week after. And I am going to tie the prophetic verses that talk about how this would come into being. But I want to give you the historical background. And then I will close whenever I'm done with the end of it. And I'll hit some of it because I won't be able to help myself about the prophetic stuff in the middle of it. Not like end times, but fulfilled prophecy. Israel is the greatest example that you have today of Bible prophecy. If you ever wanted to tell somebody that the Bible is real, you open up a map, you turn on the news, and you go, see these people? They exist by the hand of God and the hand of God alone. No other people in the history of the world were moved from their land, kept their culture, kept their identity, and kept their religion, and kept their language. Where are the Amalekites? Where are the Eastern Islanders? Where are the Mayans? They don't exist because they faded into history. Israel is the only people that has ever done. Why? Because God said. That's why. God said they would be dispersed and moved around the world, and this is going to be the greatest witnessing tool in our day because of these events that are going to just start keep transpiring. So from the college, there were two courses that we taught. One is called Israel Today 1 and then Israel Today 2. Each one of those are 12 lectures, and each one has about 4 pages of notes. So it's a grand total of about 80-something pages of notes for the courses themselves. What I tried to do was cut it down. So since I started working on this last Thursday when I left, right Wednesday when we left, and I just started trimming the notes because I forgot. It was one of the things I left, and I was like, ugh. I was like, I forgot to email those notes to me. So I had to call Abby, and I was like, I need you to go into my computer, and I need you to send me these notes. When she sent me the notes, it was the ones that Billy scanned for me about 7 years ago, and it didn't have the answers to the questions. So I had to sit there and go through and then work through them all. So it took me a while to consolidate. This is part or the majority of lecture or course one, and I've taken it from those 40-something pages of notes down to about 16. And I'm going to give you mainly the high points. When this is done, probably not next week, but the week after, I'm going to have a copy for everybody. And the reason I'm doing this is so that you can take these home and read these, listen to the sermon again, listen to the message again, so you can be ready to give an answer. That's why. Because there are so there's so much falsehood, straight up blatant lies and misunderstandings about Israel today and what they're doing in the land that you need to be able to give an answer. And you can't just, well, yes, you can. You don't just want to go, well, I believe, right? That doesn't work for people like me. I'm a doubting Thomas. Put out your hand. I'm sticking my finger in that hole. I want to know if that's you. I'm going to stick it in the side, whatever it is. I want to know that's you. You got to prove to me. I'm a show me guy, even though I'm from Ohio, not Missouri. And a lot of people are going to want these things. And when you start laying out, God, not only did God say, but let me show you how He did it. All right? So the reason I say it's not going to be very exciting because I'm basically just going to read the notes and then do my best not to ad-lib. And I didn't expect to take more than 10 minutes with what I was going to open up with, and I took 30. Sorry, I can't help myself. Okay, so although many Christians have been taught that the Jews as a whole killed Jesus and as a result are eternally cursed, the truth is that they have been more successful under worse conditions than any race ever. Even as a casual look at the War of Independence in 48, the Suez Affair in Egypt in 56, the Six-Day War in 67, the Yom Kippur War in 1973, should have convinced anyone that God has His hand and His eye on the people of Israel. And what I tell people when they start saying this, that the Jews killed Jesus, I go, no, you did. You did. You did. Anybody who's ever sinned killed Him. And by the way, I always jokingly say, if you are a Catholic or were a Catholic or Italian, you did it. Because the Romans were the ones that did this and that. Just because you had a bunch of Jewish leaders over here on the side going, kill him, crucify him, they didn't drive the nail. We did. And he voluntarily went to the cross of his own accord, he said. He said he could have called a bunch of angels and could have stopped this whole thing. So we did. It doesn't matter who drove the nail. God still has his hand on his people, and he hasn't replaced his people. So even though all of the Jews are not active in religion, the overwhelming majority of the citizens of Israel are Jewish and consider themselves to be people of the book because their ancestors first settled the land 3,500 years ago. Israel today is the only nation that has its document that says they're allowed to be a nation. One of the things that we are talked about today is, you know, that one of the things that the left is using to drive this nation apart, to divide it, is to say it's a bunch of white Western imperialists who came in and brought a bunch of slaves and took over a bunch of the Indians and subjected all the people that they ever come in contact with, right? So they're causing division. To which I always go, show me a piece of dirt in the world that has not been conquered by conquest. A boundary that exists in the world today that was not done because somebody went to war over it. It's the nature of mankind. But there's one people that after the United Nations was founded, they said, here, this is your land. Now, they fought after they got the piece of paper. But Israel didn't fight their way in to get to what they have today. It was given to them by the United Nations. And all the Arabs went, uh-uh. And then that's when the fighting started. Now, don't get me wrong. There was a bunch of fighting leading up to that, and I'll hit some of that. But, and we all know, and several of the founding leaders, both from Britain, in America said, this is why they get to go back to the land. And so for 1900 years, the Jews all over the world waited for the return of Israel. And we all know they make that declaration next year in Jerusalem. There are prayers that the rabbis would pray when they would quote the book of Ezekiel saying that he is going to gather us from around the nations. They have been praying this continuously since 70 and 135. One British official said that no other problem of our time is rooted so deeply in the past. The scattering of the Jewish people, the diaspora, out of their promised land began in the 8th century BC with the Assyrians and the Babylonians, the regathering, and then underneath the Romans, both in 70 when the temple was destroyed and again in 135 under the Bar Kokhba revolt. Even after the Jews and Christians were ran out of Jerusalem at the destruction of the temple and in Hadrian in his reign from 132 to 135 Bar Kokhba revolt, the Jewish people have always maintained the tie to the land. It is a lie to say that they did not live in the land. There has always been a Jewish presence in the land. Always. It may have been a few thousand or a few hundred, but there have always been Jewish people in the land. So when you hear them say that the Jews came in and swooped up and took it from all the Arabs, it's a lie. that they never had a place in the land. And people, and this tells you the kind of people you're dealing with, because the smart people, so the leaders in the Arab countries and in our government that are saying those things are not idiots. They're morons, but they're not idiots. They know what history says, but they're lying because they have a political, religious, financial motive for what they're trying to do to Israel. Many Jews in Israel were massacred by the Crusaders during the 12th century, and the community of the Jews rebounded in the next two centuries as a large number of rabbis and Jewish pilgrims immigrated to Jerusalem and in the Galilee area. Prominent rabbis established communities in Safed and other cities for the next 300 years, and by the 19th century, the years before the birth of modern Zionism, more than 10,000 Jews lived in what we call Israel today. All right, Israel's birth certificate. We said it's right here. And then from 1,878 years, from 70 to 1948, the land of Israel was ruled by many foreign governments and never by the people which lived in it. And the name of the land of Israel was constantly changed by successive rulers to suit their needs. This is just an overview of this period of time, and no way covers all of the events, all the persecutions, every single event. That's what the whole course was about. And I wasn't going to take the next 6 months to cover this. If you want, you can get the course after I transcribe all of the notes, because they need to be fixed. Billy really hooked us up, because when the church, when the school was closing, all they did was scan PDFs of all of the courseware notes. They didn't scan the one with the answer sheets in it either. It was a very big challenge. Fortunately, I kept every single book and note when I went through the college, and I was able to fill in all the blanks. That's what I did for the 3 years between the time I was at Keilat till we started here. It was basically save the school. All right, so it was changed. God had already talked about how they lost their... the only people that ever got to come back. All right, the Romans had it, ruled it, basically from before the time of the temple, you know, because it was the whole thing that they were hoping that Jesus was going to do was get them out of underneath the oppression of the Romans. So the Romans and all of that really started B.C. about 60, 70, 80 years, I think. But their rule over that land at the beginning of the Diaspora was from 70 until around 395, the Byzantines after that, until about 636. And so they were the ones that ruled it, but the name that you hear today in Palestine was given to it by Hadrian. So he was the ruler that came in to put down the Bar Kokhba revolt. So there was the destruction of the temple, which Yeshua said was going to happen. He told him that was going to happen. He told him the reason that it was going to happen. He said, because you didn't recognize the time of your visitation. So that's why the temple was destroyed. That's why they were dispersed. And then the ultimate dispersion really happened in 135 when Hadrian came in. And using their words, he had had enough of the Jewish people, and he was going to finally get rid of them and get them out of the land. And then he renamed the land Palestinia, I think. I can't remember how the Latin way of saying it. But he named it that after Israel's most hated enemy, the Philistines. What's really funny is Erdogan, the president of Turkey, was given a speech, and he's been speaking very anti-Israeli about his stuff, but he had a slide up, and it literally, the English translation literally said Philistine. I was just like, that's funny, dummy, you know. But why? Because he's using the Palestinians. As they're using them as tools. And some of these things I got to say while they're on my head, because if not, they'll go away. But people are up in arms about the Palestinian camps and stuff, and we should be. So that's one of the things I got to say now also, is they are not objects, okay? The Palestinian people are not objects. They're not people that we should hate just because they're in obstacles. And, right, they're still children of God. And there are many Palestinian Christians who have been lied to by their own people about who Israel is and all of that. And so we want to be people of compassion. But when you got people that do the wickedness that was done, and then you as a citizen are cheering and taking pictures of people in the back of trucks, you bear some culpability to, you know, kind of what's happening there. All right. So there are Palestinian camps in the West Bank, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Jordan. How come nobody ever says anything about those Palestinian camps? Because it's not politically advantageous to. Why didn't anybody say anything when tens of thousands of Palestinians were killed in the Syrian civil war? Because it's not politically advantageous to. But when Israel does it, everybody lays an egg. He also changed the capital of Jerusalem to Alia Capitolina after he changed the whole area to Palestine. All right, so during the Roman and Byzantine rule, large Jewish communities survived mainly in the Galilee area and on the coastal plains in Judea. The Talmud was compiled during that first 400 years, 500 years, and that records that there were 400 Jewish villages in that time. And when you say villages, it's not like there were 400 towns of a million people. It could have been 400 towns of 20 people. It just not that it's got the numbers. All right, and then in 614 AD, a Jewish force said that the number was 20,000 aided the Persians in their conquest of the land. So there was about 20,000 Jewish people that helped. In exchange, the Persians promised a measure of freedom and the right for the Jews to return, but that didn't last long. And then the Arabs had the land from 636 to 1072, and then ultimately till 1099. The land was divided by the Arabs into two military districts. Okay, on both sides of the Jordan River. The one on the west side was Palestine, and the one on the east side was called the Jordan, the Jordan. The Arabs built the town of Ramallah as administrative center, and this was the only town founded by them. Under the Arab rule, a slow process of Arabization and Islamization took place until finally the majority of the population converted to Islam by the sword and spoke Arabic. And then many Arab tribes from Arabia and Egypt immigrated into the land during this period, and the immigration continued from the 7th until the 20th century. Okay, so we know that the Arabs are mentioned in the Bible as the brothers of the Jews. We know this. Whether it be through Isaac and Ishmael, or whether it be in Jacob and Esau, we know that Esau married the daughter of the Ishmaelites, created the Edomites, and then those people groups came out of all of that. And we know that technically they're brothers and long-distance cousins. I've said it this way, that the case that I would make for peace, if I was a world leader, would be to use the Bible and say the children of Israel get what they went into with Joshua, with what the tribes did, okay? Because Abraham was promised all this land from the Mediterranean to Euphrates, but Ishmael was promised to be of 12 nations, 12 sons, and 12 nations would come out of him. So I would say today, hey, you can have all of this, but what Joshua settled and the 12 tribes and all of that was done and they laid out, that's Israel. We're not talking about it. That's it. And if you burp in this direction, I'm going to kill every single one of you. I mean, that's how strong you would have to be. This is what people don't understand about the Arab culture. They understand bully culture. If somebody comes up and punches you and they're looking to demean you or to conquer you and you don't hit back, then they go, that guy's weak. I'm going to be able to take him. Now, and you're like, well, Jesus said turn the other cheek. In the context of a brother, not some stranger that's coming up and trying to conquer you. You know the Jewish people don't get that because they've just leveled half of Gaza. So obviously they know that you got to protect yourself. And if you don't, and if you haven't seen what was done, these are wicked people. And you can use this as an analogy or an example when people go, well, God said to kill women and children and their animals. Now you know why. Now you know why. It'll make you sick to your stomach. All right, so they're the brothers, and then I'll kind of skim through some of this because most of you know what's going on with Muhammad. What people don't realize is that he was the first to kind of monotheize, if that's a word, of that area because they had, like all the other pagans, he was the one that took their Allah, the chief moon god. That's why you see the moon crescent on all their stuff. And he was like, that's God. His name is Allah. The rest of them are not gods. And so then he made the Arabs monotheistic people, and that's where that came from, in case you didn't know. All right, then the golden era, if you will, of the Arab period was from 750 until around 1258, and that was up until around ultimately, because, well, I say 1258 because then the Crusaders and all that stuff kind of happened in the midst of all of that, all right? But then it led into the Ottoman time. So right after that, what they call the golden era of the Arab time, when they begin to conquer the not just the Middle East, they went all the way up to Spain. They took a large portion up into Europe. That's why the Crusaders did what they did, because they were pushing back and they're like, oh, hey, while we're going, let's just go all the way to Jerusalem. And they were pushing all of the Arabs back. Now, they did a bunch of bad things on the way down there. So they weren't a bunch of saints like they thought they were, but they did a lot of bad things on the way down. But that's what led them down to Jerusalem, and then why they had it for a few hundred years and until the Arabs kind of took it back over, which would have been this Mamluk rule. And then the Ottoman rule, which was from 516 to about 1917. And I'm going to hit this part, and it will be about wrapping this up. During this time of the Ottomans, the land was divided separately in administrative districts. The Ottomans did not have a name for the land as a whole under the Ottoman rule, especially between the 17th and 18th centuries. Insecurity and oppression prevailed throughout the land, and because of the marauding Bedouin tribes, there was internal strife between the local alliances in the land. You don't say. Does that still happen today? Yes. Let's see. Not only were the number of villages reduced to about half the size, but the population of Israel dwindled. And at the beginning of the 19th century, the 1800s, there was when the population was around 250,000, not Jews or Arabs, but the whole land. And that whole region was about all it had. Then the British rule had it from 1918 until 1948. They renamed the land to Palestine based off that old name that Hadrian had given it. And originally, the British mandate over Palestine extended to both sides of the Jordan River. And in 1922, Britain partitioned the mandated territory into Palestine west of the Jordan and Transjordan east of the Jordan. During the second half of the 19th century, both Jewish and Arab communities began to grow so that by 1914, the population of the land west of the Jordan was estimated to be around 680,000 total, 85,000 of whom were Jewish. Again, that presence that always existed with some immigration just started to increase. Mark Twain wrote, "Many civilizations have come and gone and have held their torch high for a while, but the Persians, the Medes, the Babylonians, but where are those civilizations now? They held their torches high and faded into the stardust. They are no longer with us, but the Jew is still here. What is the secret of the Jewish immortality? The truth is God has chosen these people." It is a miracle. It is absolutely a miracle. Who is familiar with the protocols of the Elders of Zion? Okay. So in 1903, a Russian newspaper published an article called The Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which was supposedly a Jewish plan to take over the world. Actually, it was an old play that someone believed and adapted with Jewish characters. The protocol was supposedly the minutes of a meeting where the Jews were going to take over the world. Where have we heard that before? Some of your favorite Christian websites. They got the banks. They got the White House. They got Hollywood. I forget the guy's name. If I could remember his name, I would call him an idiot. He better get right with God, because he's one of these guys that's been out telling a lot of people that when Trump was in, the Jews had Trump, right? They have no place. These are Christian men that are saying Israel has no right to the land today. God's done with those people. He got rid of them in 70. And replacement theology is a horrible theology. And so we're not talking about just what the Arabs believe. We're talking about what Christians believe. And I gave this about a month or so ago when I said that... the overwhelming majority of Christian denominations hold a replacement theology view. You are in the minority of the minority of the minority. When you're not just don't accept replacement theology, you're in one of those people that are like, shouldn't we keep Sabbath too? Right? So this group is small, very small. All right, so the reason I bring this up is because this book and what I didn't go through and what I didn't, because like I said, I didn't want to make this the whole thing, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks and months, is there has all, in all of those periods, while the Jews may not have been in the land, Everywhere they went, they were persecuted. 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. Why? Because the Inquisition was happening in Spain. Right? That's why some people speculate that he was Jewish and that several people on the ship were Jewish. I don't know. I didn't hang out with him. All throughout history, the Arabs were doing it, the Romans were doing it, the church was doing it. And then it got into Russia, which is where this came from, and what started the pogroms, when all of a sudden it's the foundation for the Fiddler on the Roof, right? Because all the persecution that was happening to the Jewish people, and then some of it was based on this, some of it was just because why? Because anybody moved by the devil is going to hate God's people. And this is just, you have to realize, and I found this so fascinating. I can't remember, it was Jeremy Gimpel. I was listening to a video that Dr. Berryhill had sent me. He's from the Land of Israel Network. And he, not a believing Jewish person, a rabbi, but not doesn't believe that Yeshua is the Messiah. But he made a very interesting point, and the title of the video was, "The Separation Has Begun." And he said, you have to ask yourself, when this happened on October the 7th, he said, why are all the people that are against the Jews would not be together if the Jews were not around? He said, why are the homosexual, the transgender, the environmentalist, the Marxist, and all these people standing with the Arabs, with Hamas? Why? He said, because they're all from the devil. They're all on the losing side. That's why they're unified in the cause, because they are of their father, the devil. And I was like, wow, that's a very interesting point. You really think about it that way. It's why? Because it's in the spirit that's what's happening, and that's why it's drawing these people. And I don't mean to make light of it, but I thought it was funny. And that was, if a transgender person is trying to support Hamas went to Gaza, their pronouns would be was and were. They'd get killed. And people are just ignorant to what it is, huh? It's a good one. I didn't create it. It was on Facebook, so you know it was brilliant. But anyway. All right. But guess what? Let's see. So in 1944, the German propaganda ministry declared that if it was possible to checkmate the 300 secret Jewish kings that rule the world, then the people could at last find peace. And this was the spin or the Protocols of Elders of Zion idea. And this idea of propagandizing, as you might think, started in the church with Pope Gregory in 1622 when he appointed a society of cardinals to oversee foreign missions to and persuade people to accept that Catholic faith. And in 34 and 37, 34, there were some court proceedings that finally said this whole protocol of Elders of Zion is ridiculous, and they finally called it out for what it is. It was a fake news play adapted to blame on the Jews. And the reason I bring it up is because that spirit is still prevalent today, and there are people that still think that same thing. And in one day, however this plays out in the future, when is there's going to rise another group of people that are going to say, if we could just get rid of these Jews, we would have peace. Because we all know they're in Hollywood, they're in the banks, they're in the government, they're part of the Illuminati and the world whatever, and we know it's them Jews still trying to take over the world. Same spirit of the devil. I'm on note 25 of 77. By the end of the 19th century, it was clear that anti-Semitism was quite strong. Zionist leaders began to emerge and prepare the way back to the homeland. The situation among the Jews in the 19th century Russia was particularly harsh. Nearly a century before, they were forced to live in small regions known as the Pale of Settlement and give up their professions and trades to work the land. And in no less than two centuries, 600 laws against the Jews had been enacted, and in 1881, when the Tsar Alexander II was assassinated, the Jews were blamed. And within weeks, intense pogroms were established to solve the Jewish problem. In 160 towns and villages, Jews were killed, their property was destroyed, and by 1894, there was a plan to destroy the 6 million Jews of Russia. Sounds familiar. There was an event called the Dreyfus Affair in 1894, in October. A man named Dreyfus, he was a French captain, Alfred Dreyfus, who was the son of a wealthy merchant was suddenly arrested and accused of being a spy. And in December of 1894, with forged papers and an unfair trial, Dreyfus was found guilty and sentenced to life on Devil's Island off the coast of French Guiana. And after Dreyfus and his family had gone through two publicly demoting trials, and the Jews in general had been humiliated by the anti-Semitic actions of the whole matter, Dreyfus was finally granted a pardon by the President of the French Republic, and as a result of his exoneration, he was reinstated in the army as a major and served another year. He reenlisted in World War I and was promoted to lieutenant colonel, and the Dreyfus affair made a strong impact on the outlook of the world concerning the Jews and their mistreatment. Jews everywhere were shocked that in the homeland of liberty in the Great Revolution, that such hatred of the Jews could still produce prejudice behavior of a major part or major person of the French people. And many of the future leaders of Israel and pioneers in Zionism started to have their world view forged as a result of this. And then among those, and this was the guy who's accredited with that, was Theodor Herzl. He was a Jewish lawyer from Vienna who believed in the assimilation of the Jews. And the assimilation of the Jews meant that he believed that the Jews should live their lives in whatever country they had settled and not try to go back to Palestine. Herzl was sent to report on the Dreyfus affair in France. And when he saw all of this, he was like, we got to get our land. We can't do this because they're gonna do this everywhere we go. And that's what changed, one of the things that was foundational to changing his mind from being an assimilator to really being a Zionist, saying that we all got to go back home. All right, and then Theodor Herzl laid the plan for a Jewish company to be formed to be responsible for land purchases, providing housing. So that whole thing drove a lot of that stuff to get him ready to start laying that foundation. And some people say, well, see, this isn't God. This is just secular. And I was listening to one of Dr. Brown's podcasts the other day, and there was a woman that called in that said she used to be a Zionist. And she goes, God didn't have anything to do with what's happening over there. It's all secular. This is all done by just Jewish people trying to get back to the land. And he made this one point. I'd added one more. I mean, I could have told the doctor. But he said, who scattered the Jews? She said, well, God. He goes, then who can regather the Jews? Only God. She goes, well, no, they're rebellion. They're just going against God and going back in the land. He goes, like, no, you're not listening. If God said, I'm going to scatter the Jewish people and I'm going to regather them, and if they're being regathered, then who's regathering them? This isn't them. This is God. And she's like, no, but it's still secular. She's like, okay, come on. Okay, so this is what I would have said. So how did God scatter them? The Romans, secular, we're done talking. He's always used people to get things done. Very rarely does he bring hell, fire, and brimstone and bust open and flood the earth, right? Those are rare, but most of the time he's using the hands of people. It's why Isaiah wrote so much in the first 24 chapters when he was saying judgment was coming against the Assyrians, the Babylonians, and all of those people, because he said to them, hey, I used you to punish my people, but you went too far. Same thing's going to happen to the Russians. Same thing's going to happen to the Germans. They went too far. All right, and then there was a couple other guys that came out of it, Chaim Weizmann, and then Leon Pinsker. And what Heisman's contribution was is he was a scientist, and he made explosives, created this explosive. And he and the Brits used it, and they attributed it to being one of the reasons they were so successful in winning World War I. And so they went to Mr. Weizmann and said, what can we do for you for your contribution to the war effort? He said, get my people home. And so what spiritual principle do we take? And I'll probably just start with this, is God is faithful to his people. And he said to them in multiple times, he's like, I'm not doing this for your sake. I'm doing this for my sake, for my namesake, but also because in his namesake, meaning I've made a covenant with you. So he haven't disbanded his people. And there's a difference between, and I wrestled kind of with the idea whether or not, you know, we misunderstand when Paul talks about spiritual Israel, and we think spiritual Israel is the replacement of the literal Israel. And those of us that are grafted into the Commonwealth of Israel are part of that spiritual thing, and that's why he says there's neither Jew or Greek and all that, because that's that. Too many people have tried to connect those things with literal and go, no, these are two different things. He still has a covenant with his people. And he is going to regather them. And they are going to say what? Baruch Abba Hashem Adonai. And we're watching all of this happen and all of this lined up. And I've got so much more. And I'm only on note 32 of 77. And that's not even the next course yet. Okay. And I've been kind of even skimming through some of this. Yeah, I don't want to do that now because I'll get on a tangent. I got to stop. I'm sorry, I'm just going to say this right now. You got to go find a book on that history. Somebody had mentioned it to me the other day when I was talking about this. That covers in more. Dr. Brown's book. Yeah, you mentioned that book, but Dr. Brown said our hands are stained with blood when he said he devoted 3 chapters to the persecution of the Jewish people at the hands of the church. And so you can get more details of all the stuff that was happening to the Jewish people throughout that period. And then you said, what was that other one? From time immemorial. That, like I said, I didn't want to make this into that where we're covering the entire 1900 years from that diaspora until when it started. What I'm going to get into next week is to show you how through that period and all that persecution and all those things that happened and in the inquisitions and church stuff and pogroms and all of that stuff, God sustained all his people. And then he started using people like Weizmann and Pinsker and Herzl, and they were in unique positions to then set the stage for all of this. And when we start talking about all this, I'm going to show you how the Arabs today, how much more they're being hypocrites, that their names and the names of those regions were given to them by the British as well. I'm not saying they didn't have places in the land, but their land was carved out and given to them too. And I'm going to show you how all that came out to being. And I'll probably spend 30 minutes on that by itself. And when I start telling you the names of those people, we'll just go look at a map today because that's where their names came from. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we bless you and we thank you for this opportunity to get together on Shabbat. And Father, we thank you for this knowledge and this history that was kept for us, that we can look back and see that even in judgment, when your people were scattered around the world, even when they were being persecuted, you still had your hand on them. You sustained them. And you sustained the Torah, and you sustained the tradition, and you sustained the language. For such a time as this, for when it was time to prepare them to bring them home, Lord God, what a time to be alive and what an awesome time to see you begin to fulfill the words that were spoken by the prophets, by Yeshua himself. And so help us to make sure that we are digging out the truth so that we are in a position to give answers, to deal with all of the emotionalism that people are feeling with what's happening right now. That yes, people are concerned about what's happening to a lot of innocent people in Gaza. But at the same time, just like when you sent your people into battle to take over the land of Canaan, you knew and we should have known that this was going to have to be done in conflict. And we know that you are bringing them back in unbelief, but one day that it will all be in belief and they will come and look upon him whom they have pierced, Lord. And there will be such an outpouring and such a move of your spirit that we can't even comprehend it, Lord. But help us to make sure that we are rightly dividing your word, rightly dividing history, and that we don't use those things to justify our current position, but that we find out the truth and not accept the lies that are being propagated by the media and by many other people, usually on the left, and some right-wing people that we just pray that you would convict and cause them to repent, Lord. And we just thank you for this time. I thank you for this people, Lord, in Yeshua's name. Amen.